You'll notice that Mrs. Roger, our clerk, is not present this evening. She is out of town, and Mr. Unger has graciously agreed to fill in, so thank you for that. In closed session, we have a stipulated expulsion hearing and that we discussed, and I would appreciate hearing a motion on that.
I move approval of the recommended expulsion.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. I'm going to be, just so the audience knows, I'm going to be passing around our paperwork that we need to sign in that regard now that the vote has been taken. You can start. Okay. Also in closed session, we discussed a personnel item involving review and possible action on employment dismissal or discipline of district employees. And also, we had a conference with our labor negotiators. I have a couple of changes on the consensus of order of business. And Mr. Pinkerton or Mrs. Campbell, please correct me if I don't get this exactly right, because I'm working from a lot of notes. Item 9.09 under the discussion action, authorized request for design build construction delivery method for the building grounds and transportation office expansion renovation project. We are removing from this evening's agenda. And then item 10.03, which is currently under action consent, the certification to the State Board of Education temporary athletic coaches for 2018-19, we are moving to the discussion action section. And if I don't remember that when we get to that part of the agenda, please remind me. Okay. I have a lot of papers up here. All right. Any other changes to the consensus on the order of business for this evening? All right, then we will move along to 4.04, the approval of minutes of March 5, 2019.
I'll approve the minutes of March 5th, 2019.
I'll second. So any discussion?
I will be abstaining from that vote.
All right. Anything further? All in favor?
Aye.
So motion carries 5-0 with one abstention and one absence. Motion by Mr. Millar, second by me. All right. Next, we have our presentations, and we're very happy to see you here this evening.
Hi, nice to see you too. For those that don't know me, I'm Annalise from Morro Bay High School, and I have a few updates on what we've been up to lately. So our theater arts program has been working really hard the past few months to prepare for their production of Mamma Mia. They had three showings this past weekend, and they have a showing this Friday, the 22nd, and the 23rd, I believe at 7 p.m., and there are tickets available on the Morro Bay High School website for those who are interested in checking it out. Gotta love Mamma Mia. Today was our Just One Job Fair at Morro Bay, so it gave students in 11th grade an opportunity to practice their interviewing skills, practice creating a resume, and they got to interview with real local businesses for potential jobs and openings for, I'm sorry, I can't think of the word, internships, excuse me, I could not find that word, potential internships. In terms of winter sports, I know I mentioned last time I was here that Cole Visconti, one of our boys wrestlers, advanced to the state meet. Unfortunately, he did not place, but our boys wrestlers as a team and our basketball team took the league title this year. In terms of individuals from girls wrestling, we had a freshman named Hazel Sonnerberg, and she actually got first in league as an individual, moved on to CIF, and then advanced to state and took seventh the entire state of California, so that's really great for a freshman especially. So we're really proud of her. And ASB, we've been working on planning for an event we have coming up in April, April 26th. It's going to be kind of like our spring carnival and also a music festival combined. It's going to be to fundraise for the programs at our school and ASB, and we hope that we can get student performers and local bands together, and there will be club booths set up, so I'll have more information as we move further along on that. It's going to be called Moropalooza. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
I'd just like to support the Mamma Mia thing, and I just would urge everybody, get your tickets now because it's selling out. And I have experienced that, so it's a struggle.
Dr. Prater.
And congratulations, Annalise. She found out today she got into UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, yay!
Okay, hi, I'm Prachi. So I was actually doing Mamma Mia 2. It's this weekend, this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I'm in it, so if you guys want to come support, come watch. I'll be dancing on the stage. This Friday is actually World Water Day, and to honor that, ASB is putting on a Penny Wars, and that's actually run through our Commissioner of Sustainability, who's actually here. Hi, Bella. Yeah, that's Bella. And so with all the money that we raise, we're giving it to a nonprofit organization called Gravity Water, and they basically build water filtration systems in Nepal. And we've worked with them before, and we've worked with them through volleyball, and I think earlier this year too, Bella, if I'm correct. Yeah. Yeah. So they're super cool, and they do really great things. So we're really excited for that. And tomorrow, we actually have something called What We Wish Our Parents Knew. It's new this year, and basically we have a panel of students answering questions for parents just on a broad range of topics, whether it's like academics or social life or social media even. So it should be a good event. Yeah. And next week we have our spring rally to highlight our spring sports and academics and honor roll recipients. So it should be a fun way to start off spring break. Yeah, a lot more fun to come this trimester. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. All right. Next, we have Pacheco Program Highlights.
Good evening. Mr. Jones has done an excellent job as the new principal at Pacheco Elementary School, and he brought some top-notch students to share activities that have been going on there at Pacheco. Mr. Jones.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes.
Estamos agradecidos de tener la oportunidad de presentar a ustedes esta noche y hablar de las cosas que está pasando en Pacheco. En Pacheco, nosotros hablamos, leemos, escribimos, enseñamos y aprendemos en dos idiomas. Y esta presentación no será diferente. So we're appreciative of this opportunity we have to highlight the things going on at Pacheco. And like I was saying, at Pacheco, we speak, read, teach, learn, and write in two languages, and this presentation will not be any different than that. But don't worry, we'll provide translation. So tonight, I brought with me some students who are going to share with you what they feel is best about being a Pacheco Panther. But before I have them come up, I want to share with you why they're here tonight, besides the fact that they're awesome. A significant undertaking that Pacheco has been engaged in over the last number of years is the implementation of the 90-10 model. Through this transition, our teachers have worked tirelessly to make this a successful implementation, and it's amazing to see the benefits of this change over the last number of years. Currently, we're in our fourth year of implementation, and our first 90-10 cohort is now in third grade. And the students that I brought with me tonight are third graders in Maestra Rigi's, Maestra Tabuenca's, and Maestra Zat's classes. And back in the first year of implementation when they were kindergartners, in 2015-16 school year, the Pacheco team shared a video that showed the progress that they were making just as kindergartners. And tonight I want to show a portion of that video and then have the same students that are in the video, now as third graders, get up and talk about how they feel about their experience at Pacheco. So I do want to warn you, this is probably one of the most adorable videos you'll ever see. So.
Ah, está bien padre divertirse con los amigos, ¿verdad?
Yes.
¿Y te gusta que estás aprendiendo inglés y español?
Sí.
¿Por qué?
Porque me gusta el español y el inglés, porque me gusta hablar los idiomas.
Zoe, what do you like about the school?
That we get to do on color time, and I love coloring.
Yeah. ¿Y te gusta leer en español en tu clase?
Sí.
¿Por qué?
Yo tengo un libro favorito.
¿Cuál es?
Es de perros.
Y ahorita que entré a tu clase había una canción de Super Lector. ¿Te la sabes?
Sí.
¿Cómo va?
Super Lector, hace todo para leer mejor. Leer palabras grandes o chiquitas y las lee con su dedo. ¡Así! ¡Snap! ¡Cuidado! ¡Aquí viene el Super Lector!
¡Wow!
Porque veo a mis amigos.
¿Y qué más haces aquí?
Puedo aprender cosas nuevas.
¿Cómo qué?
Como que lea un libro para aprender todas las cosas que aprendí.
Espérame, ¿ya sabes leer?
Ya.
¿Cuándo aprendiste?
En mi casa.
¿En tu casa aprendiste? ¿Hace mucho, mucho tiempo o apenas?
Apenas.
¿Y como qué libros?
Do you know an English song that you sing in school too?
No.
No? You don't know any English songs that you sing at school?
They don't teach you any English?
So.
Wait. I thought you went to Mrs. Garcia to learn English.
I do, but I forget most of the songs because, like, I'm very more Spanish and. And it, like, because the English comes out of my mind, and that sort of way.
Oh, is that what happens? The English kind of goes out of your mind, you go into your Spanish mind?
Yeah.
So is it like you have two brains right now?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm in English. Oh, no, now I'm in Spanish. Now I forgot the song.
So now as third graders, I'd like to introduce Jocelyn, Zoe, Zach, and Hope.
Hola, mi nombre es Jocelyn Martiñón Morales. Yo soy una estudiante de tercer grado en la Escuela Pacheco. A mí me gusta mi escuela porque tengo la oportunidad de aprender dos idiomas, inglés y español. En el futuro voy a usar el inglés y el español para ayudar a niños pobres en todo el mundo. En Pacheco, todos los niños celebran la caminata. Me gusta porque hay música mientras estamos corriendo y también porque al final recibimos un jamboree. Mis maestras y maestras me han ayudado en mi aprendizaje y me han motivado a ser el mejor estudiante posible. Quiero dar gracias a Pacheco por brindarme su apoyo que me ha ofrecido como estudiante. Gracias por escuchar mis palabras. Hello, my name is Jocelyn Martínez Morales. I am a third grade student of Pacheco School. I like my school because I have the opportunity to learn two languages, English and Spanish. In the future, I'm going to help poor children around the world. In Pacheco, we celebrate the walkathon. I like because you get mist in the face with water, and the best part of it all is that you get to run while music is playing, and because you, and the best part of it all too is because at the end you get Jamba Juice. My teachers have helped me in my learning and motivate me to be a better student. I want to thank Pacheco for the support has offered me as a student. Thank you for listening to my words.
Mi nombre es Zoe y soy un estudiante en Pacheco en la clase de la señora Rigi. Me gusta Pacheco y la escuela en general porque hay miles de excelentes maneras de hacer amigos. Como si hay alguien en la escuela que no sabe inglés muy bien, siempre puedes hablar con ellos en español o podría ser de la otra manera. Yo ya he hecho 4 amigos ahí significando Pacheca. Son muchos amigos por medio escolar, ¿verdad? También hay muchos eventos geniales como el Día del Niño y el espectáculo de talento que ya hice este año. Pero la mejor parte de Pacheco son los fabulosos maestros ahí. Gracias por hacer todos los años que he estado en Pacheco tan divertidas. Hola, mi nombre es Zoe y soy un estudiante Hello, my name is Zoe, and I'm a third grader at Pacheco in Mrs. Rigi's class. I like Pacheco and school in general because there are billions of great ways to make friends. Like if there is someone at school who doesn't know English, you can always speak to them in Spanish, or it could be the other way around. I have already made 4 friends. They are meeting Pacheco. Lots of friends for half a school year, right? There are also lots of cool events like Dia del Niño, Spanish for Day of the Kid, and the talent show, which I'm in this year. But the best part about Pacheco is the awesome teachers there. Thank you for making all the years I've been in Pacheco so fun.
Hola, buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Isaac. Yo soy estudiante de tercer grado en la clase de la maestra Rigi. Para mí es importante ser bilingüe porque puedo hablar con todas las personas en Pacheco o otras escuelas bilingües y con todo el mundo. En el futuro, yo voy a usar los 2 idiomas para hablar con muchas personas y hacer muchos amigos. Yo amo Pacheco porque hay muchas cosas divertidas, por ejemplo, el Día de los Muertos y más. Algunas de mis cosas favoritas de Pacheco es que tenemos la oportunidad de usar los Chromebooks en nuestra escuela. Gracias por ayudarme a saber 2 idiomas.
Hi, my name is Isaac. I'm a third grade student in Mrs. Rigi's class. For me, it is important to be bilingual because I can speak with all the people in Pacheco or other bilingual schools and with everyone in the world that speaks English or Spanish. In the future, I'll use these 2 languages to talk with many people and make many friends. I love Pacheco because there are many fun things to do. For example, the Dia de los Muertos and more. Some of my favorite things about Pacheco is that we have the opportunity to use Chromebooks at our school. Thank you for helping me learn 2 languages.
Hola, me llamo Hope. Yo soy estudiante en tercer grado en clase de maestra Tabuenca. Yo amo Pacheco porque todas las maestras y maestros son amables y te ayudan con todo. Hay muchas cosas que hacer como fútbol y baloncesto. Una de mis cosas favoritas en Pacheco es el espectáculo de variedades. Para mí es importante ser bilingüe porque en el futuro puedo ayudar a alguien si no sabe inglés. Gracias por hacer todo en Pacheco que sea muy divertido. Hello, my name is Hope. I'm a student in third grade in Masa Tabuenca's class. I love Pacheco because all the teachers are kind and help students with everything. There are many things to do like soccer and basketball. One of my favorite things at Pacheco is the talent show. For me, it's important to be bilingual because in the future I can help someone who doesn't know English. Thank you for making everything at Pacheco very fun.
So just to echo our students, we greatly appreciate the support and the opportunities that our students have. As you can tell, we have wonderful young people there, and they're receiving a wonderful education given the great teachers we have there. So thank you very much. Do you have any questions here for our kiddos?
Thank you. Yeah, we're just so impressed and glad that you took the time out of your evening to come see us this evening and talk to us about what you enjoy about Pacheco. Thank you again very much. And I'd like to thank our student representatives for staying. And now we understand that homework calls, I'm sure you must return. Thank you so much for coming this evening. All right, next we're at item 5.03, which is Mr. Mayfield discussing our bilingual program vision for the coast. Thank you.
Talk about a tough act to follow.
Yeah, no kidding. Huh?
Couldn't you put me on later in the agenda? first of all, I want to thank Mr. Jones and the boys and girls. Muchísimas gracias, huh? Hicieron un trabajo excelente.
Sí.
This is the 23rd year of Pacheco being in existence, and it's amazing to see the growth of students over time. We've seen our kids graduate college, and they keep in touch with us. They come back. The families are still, you know, a big part of the community, and we hear great things about what they're doing with the skills that they learned. There's an old joke, you know, if you speak two languages, you're bilingual. If you speak three languages, you're trilingual. And if you speak one language, you're American, right? And so we have to change that. And one of the 21st century skills that we can offer students is bilingualism. I have a very short presentation tonight. I'm pointing at that computer, Luana. Just advance. I've just got two slides. Yeah, thanks. So bilingual students, according to the research, have an academic advantage. It stimulates parts of the brain that monolingual instruction does not stimulate. Research is very strong, and bilingual programs are growing across the state. There's, in fact, a new grant program for starting two-way immersion programs in the state of California that is slated to begin next year. So it's a research-based program that benefits all students, English language learners, as for their long-term academic success, as well as native English speakers to acquire a second language. We've talked about for a long time the idea of adding a program of choice, another program of choice to our school district, and especially at the coast. I've heard it from teachers. I've heard it from administrators. You know, the two programs of choice that we do have are both in town at Pacheco and Teach Elementary, and the notion of adding a program of choice for our families on the coast, I think, is an important one. It's a benefit. Adding a program of choice and adding a bilingual school somewhere on the coast would be a benefit to all three schools. It would strengthen the program at Los Osos Middle School as well as Morro Bay High School. And we would, if we were to move forward with this program, expand our two-way immersion program into the middle schools, both on the coast and in town, and which would change the language model of the high school programs as well. Another thing that we've discussed is having an academic theme at the different elementary schools along the coast, and perhaps this would spark that conversation further. The cultural benefits of learning in two languages are tremendous. One of the reasons we changed to a 90-10 program model was to keep the students together all day long, and we've seen the benefits of doing that at Pacheco and the friendships that children form and the experiences that they have at a school like that, which are like no other. Currently, just looking at numbers, we have every year and year after year after year, we have a lottery to attend Pacheco. There were times when the numbers were above 80, and we were allowing in about 20 after siblings were in. And so there's been a tremendous demand for entrance into the program over time. So currently there are 160 students from the coast who attend Pacheco Elementary School, and we have 52 currently on the waiting list. 18 Coast Kinder students did not get in last year, and as of this moment, open enrollment is still open until the end of March, but we have about 17 Coastal students asking for admittance into Pacheco. If you could advance it, thank you. So all we're asking for tonight is to take this idea public, to have a couple of parent meetings and engage the community in what we have in mind, the benefits of this program, what it offers to their families, and what the model would look like kindergarten through 12th grade. We would get that feedback from the community and then bring it back to the board, perhaps through a superintendent's recommendation. But the timeline would look like this. So tonight we are just asking for the initial go-ahead. We'll have a planning meeting, the staff would, in March. We have two parent meetings scheduled for April 23rd at Baywood Elementary and April 24th here at Del Mar, and then to DLAC on April 25th. We would do model school visits. You know, one of the requests from staff has been, you know, let's not reinvent the wheel. There's some great programs out there. Let's look and see what those programs are and take the best of those programs if we were to create one here. And then, again, we would bring the feedback from the community, and we would do surveys and collect input from the community and bring that back to you so that you can make a decision on whether or not to move forward officially with a bilingual program in the future.
Thank you. This is a presentation. We don't have any yellow sheets for this. I don't know if anyone is here specifically to address the board on this topic. If so, this would be your time to do so. And I would then give our instructions about public comment at this time. Is there anyone from the public here to discuss this particular topic at this time? Okay, then we'll come back to the board. Mr. Unger?
A couple of questions that I'd like us to ponder.
Sure.
The first is a concern that I've heard from parents, and I will preface this by saying, as you may know, Mr. Mayfield, Sunday night at midnight, I just got back from being in Latin America and South America. I think that bilingualism is a gift that we give to children. The ability to speak more than one language is a gift that I wish I could have had. You know, I've dreamt that I could, you know, it would be wonderful if the old, you know, put it under your pillow at night and actually wind up speaking a second language would come true, but of course it won't. And I'm completely aware of, you know, some of the research that suggests that absolutely it is good for kids, and it's good for kids' language development. I do have some concern, though, about what happens to our Spanish-speaking kids who start the program and then choose to move to another school where the 90-10 the 90-10 program or you know, its variations throughout your school go, or Mr. Jones's school go, and leave early, and then come to a school like, say, Del Mar or something like that, they have not had that other kind of English language, those English language learning opportunities, and I think it could be very difficult for them. That's sort of the first question I have. The second thing that I'm wondering about is, what will we do for special education support for any of our students there?
Right. Well, it's nice that we have a model here in our school district that we've been, you know, operating for the past 23 years, where all these issues have come up. Kids learn literacy skills in their early years. As they're learning, if you're an English speaker, you're learning Spanish, and if you're a Spanish speaker, you're already fluent in that language. But they're still learning all the same literacy skills that students who attend monolingual English schools. So if a student were to leave, say, in the middle of first grade, they've still learned all those literacy skills of, you know, left to right, a one-to-one correspondence, et cetera, all skills that they'll be able to use in English reading. There is some instruction that needs to happen in a switch like that to give them phonetics and the specifics of the differences between learning in Spanish and learning in English. But the skills are all there. You know, the vocabulary is something that would have to develop over time. But kids, when they move to a different school from a two-way immersion school, still have the literacy skills intact from when they attended the bilingual school. But it's not ideal.
Yeah, and I'm not so much thinking of third grade. I'm I'm thinking of third, fourth grade, right in there, where we're a student still, you know, still an English language learner, for example, and they're going into a regular classroom. I would want to make sure that the supports that that student has, if they return to a monolingual school, were adequate.
Absolutely. And you know, 90-10 is the ratio of Spanish to English in kindergarten. That changes over time. And currently they're 60-40 in third grade.
Right.
And having a designated English reading time in third grade where the teachers hone in and focus in on those skills that, that aren't a part of Spanish but that are a part of English.
Okay, Mrs. Frame, then Mrs. Frame. Sorry.
Thanks, Rick. A couple of things. Could we go back to slide four? Slide two. When we're saying 52 on the waiting list, is that like the total number of students that are on the waiting list? From the coast. But that's not kinder.
No.
Okay. Do we accept kids that go to Pacheco that are, you know, I mean, I thought it was like K through, you know, six that they didn't come in, you know, they couldn't come in and right?
We established the waiting list before kindergarten. So the lottery will take place, if there is to be a lottery, which there has been almost every year, is to take place sometime in late April. It's usually when that occurs. That is when we know who gets in and who doesn't get in. Mm-hmm. The folks that don't get in are on the waiting list. So the first name picked, after we fill up the school, the first name picked is number one on the waiting list. And then we maintain that waiting list, you know, through the end of, say, second grade. At that point in time, it would be impossible for a student other than a native Spanish speaker or a student coming from another two-way immersion program to transition into the school.
Okay. The other question is, it says that 18 Coast Kinders didn't get in. Do we know how many non-Coast kids didn't get in? Is the number significantly higher in town? I mean, there's more students and more schools. So.
There are more students and more schools, and it probably would be higher. I could certainly find that number out, yeah.
And, sorry, the last thing is, do we have any native Spanish speakers on a waiting list?
You know, in general, that's a great question. In general, the native English speakers all registered during open enrollment time, and the English learner students come in more slowly. So we have not had a lottery because we haven't had more applicants during open enrollment than we had spaces for. But usually it would fill up by, say, June, and certainly if there are any leftover spaces, they would be filled up in August. So no, there's been a couple years that, you know, we had a big influx in August and we had two or three on the waiting list, but you know, they just transitioned to their home school.
So do we have a number of, I guess, students who choose not to do it, and why are there, you know, who are native Spanish speakers?
We do.
Okay.
There are lots of different reasons, you know, for people to choose that. A lot of times it's, we live on the coast and we want to attend our home school, and, you know, I don't want to send my child in on a bus, and it would be difficult for me to come in for a night meeting, for example.
But we also have parents, I guess I'm speaking to the parents in town who are choosing not to go. Do we have, I guess, data that, you know, why or, you know, they wouldn't choose? I mean, I'm, you know.
There's so many reasons.
Okay.
It would be hard to. I remember one time I was talking to this one family of an English learner, a child, and telling her all the benefits of two-way immersion, why I thought it would be good for her child to attend. And there were three or four conversations of 15 or 20 minutes each, and every time I'd say, you know, it's up to you, you make your decision. And she finally said, you know, we're going to go to Bishop's Peak. And I said, great, great school, you'll love it. You know, it's a neighborhood school, you'll really enjoy being there. So we hung up, and she called back about 5 minutes later and told the secretary, okay, go ahead and put them in Pacheco. And the secretary told me that. And I said, really? Get her on the line. I want to talk to that lady. So I said, tell me what happened. She said, I called the child care provider and said they were going to Bishop's Peak. And she said, that place is crazy at pickup. Put them at Pacheco. So, you know, there's just a myriad of reasons why people choose what they choose. But
okay, thanks, Rick.
You bet.
Okay, Mr. Unger?
The other question that just occurred to me is, Pacheco was a K-6 school, And right. on the coast, of course, we have K-5 schools. How are we going to accommodate that change? What's it going to look like as we start to plan at Los Osos Middle School?
Right. So we would look at two-way immersion for middle school. And we even we're headed to Cabe, a group of us, tomorrow. We tried to get in on a visitation to a model middle school in Long Beach, but we weren't able to do that. But we would schedule visitations to model middle school two-way immersion programs, and we would put elements in place at the middle schools. We're in the process of recruiting right now, traveling all over the state. I know principals have been up to the Bay Area. Last week I was down in San Bernardino in Los Angeles, and everybody's asking for bilingual folks. I know that all of our high schools are saying it would be great to have a biology teacher who is fully bilingual, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, we're trying to build that staff into our school district anyway, and we would do that at the middle school, and those kids would move up into some form of a two-way immersion program.
For the public, would you explain what CABE is?
Oh, it's the California Association of Bilingual Education.
Hey, Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Madam President. Rick, I know that there's a lot of details that are going to have to be worked out, but
right.
I'm hoping that these two thoughts will get looked at. My question is, what if a parent that's currently at Baywood and it's their home school
right.
is really not interested in a bilingual program? And then the second would be, there is ed code about the same thing that says a child that's in their home attendance school cannot be displaced by a student from outside their school. So I'm just throwing
right.
those out as things that
sure.
I would look forward to answers on.
So if we were to get the go-ahead from the board in June, if you were to review, you know, after we did the parent meetings and got community input, if the board were to review the community input and decide to go ahead, we would form a committee. And we would probably ask for board representation, parent representation, and staff representation on that board. We would do school visits. We would work out those logistical problems. When we first began Pacheco, we kept it as a neighborhood school. We kept the boundary within the neighborhood, and then families had the option to opt out. Most probably, we would transition the program in 1 year at a time, starting in kindergarten. So anybody currently in the school would continue in the school. So if you're an incoming kindergarten, but the idea, I had this conversation with someone just the other day that, hey, you know, if I live there, I might be more inclined if I was automatically into the program. That would certainly be something we could discuss.
Thank you.
Mrs. Frame?
Just one last thing, Rick. You know, looking at our Yale population, are we on a kind of a trajectory of increasing numbers or numbers that are kind of have stabilized?
I would say we've stabilized, yeah, and especially with, you know, the last couple of years have been tumultuous, I would say, and so we have seen a little bit of that number fluctuate some, but I would say stabilized.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, then I have a few questions.
Please.
For students now who attend Pacheco coming from the coast, what is the average time they spend on the bus?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to give you an exact number of but we certainly could find that information out.
It's my understanding it's in excess of an hour, close to an hour and a half a day. Is that right?
Total? Most likely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested in that information.
Okay. Happy to get that.
And then you indicated you described that there are 18 kinder kids from the coast who didn't get in 18-19 and that there are kids on the waiting list now. Is it, would you have, and you may not be able to answer this until after the community meetings, but is it your sense that if there were there are parents who don't even try because they don't want their kids
right.
to be away from their neighborhood, their geographic neighborhood, so maybe their kids don't go to Pacheco because they don't want them on the bus mm-hmm. that long or because the difficulty in attending mm-hmm. evening meetings. So do you feel that I'll be curious to see what we learn from the community meetings
yeah.
in that regard, what the level of interest is?
You know, when you look at the research, when you look at the data, when you look at the benefits of the program, it's pretty inviting, and I think it's a skill that we've seen it. I mean, we've had this program for 23 years in our community, and we've just seen, you know, time after time after time where families really have enjoyed the benefits. And we've, and you know, it's not just theory, right? It's not just numbers that we're looking at. We have firsthand experience, and I believe when we roll this out to the community, I think it will be well received. But we're wide open to how the community feels about this, and you know, this is, we're responding to a need. If you look at the numbers, there's a need there. And we're also, as a district, it's incumbent upon us to offer the best programs that we can possibly offer to all of our families, including those families on the coast. So, but if the community has objections, of course we would hear those. Sure. Yeah.
And then at Pacheco now, what is the kind of the ratio, do you know, of native English speaker? I mean, it's important to know that this is not a school just for English learners.
No.
That what? How many of the current Pacheco students are native English speakers versus native Spanish speakers?
Right. So the ratio is 50-50 when they come in kindergarten. Pacheco last year was 57% Hispanic.
Okay. So there's a desire among parents like most of us on the board here.
Absolutely.
Want to have their kids becoming bilingual from an early age. I would, Mr. Buckman, then I'll conclude.
Rick, we once were talking, my grandson attends Pacheco just by the skin of his teeth, which was great, just got in. And you once told me that how's the population, the density at Pacheco compared to the other schools? I think you told me it was the largest campus.
Pacheco is the largest elementary school that we have in the district, yeah. Right. This year I'm not up on my numbers, my Pacheco numbers, but I can tell you last year it was about 580 students, including preschool.
And so I think that possibly talks to the need, and pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. And then I just wanted to also indicate that should this go forward after study and input and everything we need to do, and the site is Baywood, it's my understanding we currently have a fabulous principal in place who is bilingual and is very familiar with the Pacheco model.
We do.
I believe she's in the audience right now.
She is. So.
I believe she's probably really embarrassed right now.
That's all right. She deserves the accolade. So, Mr. Millar.
I was just going to comment that I think this is a wonderful idea because we need to view these things through the lens of equity, as we kind of were reminded of at the beginning of the school year. And I think this is a great way to look at the needs on the coast.
I agree. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this. I'm going to be very excited to be hearing what we learn from the community. I think that input is really important. And
so do I.
No matter the outcome, we will have great information.
Yep. We want a good dialogue with the community
That's right. Dr. Prater.
Yeah, so just to confirm, do we have board agreement to move forward with these parent community engagement meetings?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please proceed. All right. There seems to be some support in the audience. All right. Item 5.04 under our presentations, is a call to action on climate change. Let's hear
Madam what that's President,
all about.
Thank you. Thank you. So I would like to bring Mrs. McCartney up. She's a science teacher at San Luis Obispo High School, much loved and respected. And she's also the SLO High School advisor to the Environmental Club. And she is bringing students with her tonight. As you know, last year the board approved a student-led resolution on climate change, and it was a wonderful evening and acknowledgement by our board. And they're here tonight to talk about the next step in that some of the kids are moving forward with. And there's a national movement in this regard. So I'd like to give the mic to Ms. McCartney. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for having us tonight. Like Dr. Prater said, my name is Jenny McCartney, and I teach at the high school. And the students standing behind me have all had me in class as their teacher and or as the faculty advisor for the Environmental Club. And three of the students are going to start off talking about the fact that they brought their resolution to you in June of last year. And this is a student-led initiative, so I'm going to put it on their shoulders to lead this tonight.
Good evening. My name is Laura Galanos, and I'm here tonight with Jordan Bauer, Adelie Manning, Bella Oldenburg, and Abby Phillips. We are here to appeal the school board and invite each member to participate in the education call to action on climate change.
Three of us were lucky enough to present to you and celebrate the passing of the first climate change resolution adopted by the school board in June of last year. We continue our initiative by joining other students whose school districts have passed a similar resolution by taking our call to action to Washington, D.C. next week.
Our request tonight is that one or more of you pledge the following. I formally call on Congress to act quickly and boldly on climate change to protect my students and future generations. States, communities, and school districts across the country accurately perceive the dire threat that climate change poses for our students.
As a nation, we have the technology and resources to quickly limit our greenhouse gas emissions. Congress can prevent harm and prevent significant financial costs by quickly taking bold action on climate. We need leadership from Congress. Congress has a moral imperative to take action and lead on this issue.
I also call on my fellow education leaders, trustees, superintendents, and leaders of professional associations from across the country to pass nonpartisan climate action resolutions. As mandated reporters, we have a duty to use our voices to move Congress to prevent climate harm to our students. Our unified voices will also send a strong signal to students, reinforcing some of our very best shared values, that we, elders, respect, cherish, and protect young people, that we accept mainstream science, that we can work together to solve big problems, that we have the responsibility to clean up our messes, that our nation can be a force for good in the world, that we speak up for justice, and that our voices matter, and therefore young people's voices matter as well.
Thank you for listening and for your work serving our young people. Thank you again. Can we answer any questions?
Are there any questions from the board at this time? Mr. Unger, Dr.
I just want to say that, as perhaps you know, I've been working with Mr. Guthrie for several months on this climate change initiatives. I'm really proud of the work that you're doing. I think that you're doing, you know, hopefully work that will help save the planet, because that's really where we are. As you probably also know, I and fellow members from California and throughout the Pacific Coast have brought forth a resolution which we hope will pass the National School Boards Association, supporting the need for action on climate change, especially from the federal government level. So again, I really want to thank you for the work that you're doing.
And I'm going to interject a little bit here and just state that with regard to Mr. Unger's work and the fact that he's very active on the National School Boards Association, that preempting anybody here, hopefully, that should we move forward with presenting this pledge that and having a couple of board members do so, I would like to suggest, Chris, that you might be interested in participating in that.
And if I can jump in, yes. I was going to accept your challenge to endorse these things that you've told us today that are so important. And I just want to know, is skywriting okay, or do we think that's not?
maybe that's a little bit counterproductive.
Yes, I endorse all of the initiatives that you just set forward for us, and I'm very happy to join your group.
Thank you.
Well, thank you in that regard, Dr. So at this time, I would suggest that perhaps based upon, I thought the way your group read that pledge, that perhaps if we do it in a similar fashion with a couple of our board members, would that work for you? And then logistically, what's going to happen? It's my understanding something will be taken to Washington, D.C. or carried forward?
Yes. So the point of the videos is to show Congress how much our school district cares about a more sustainable future throughout its schools. And Park believes that a video would send a really strong message to them. And what would happen to the video itself is it would get tweeted directly to congressional members and just shared amongst as many people as possible, and hopefully also be a role model for other school districts who have yet to take action on this pressing issue.
And is this something you would then be able to work with? Well, first, I want to make sure that I have the support of the board too, that this is acceptable to everyone. Should they contact you about how to make this happen?
We will, at the high school, be in contact with whoever it is decides to take the pledge, and then have students, hopefully from our multimedia group, the video broadcasting class, film it.
So if we have a couple of people do it on behalf of the board as an entirety, then that's acceptable?
I'll be in contact with you tomorrow and set up a time that would work for you as soon as possible. Dr. Pater, you had something to add as well?
Yeah, all you would need to do is coordinate with Ms. Campbell.
Okay.
And she'll connect all the dots for you.
And if I could ask, I would just want to make sure that the language of this reflect that it's the whole board itself, not just the individual board members. I think that's really important.
I think the script allows for some blanks to be filled in, literally, that we could put how you wanted that part to be introduced before you read the content of the script, so we can make that clear.
We are all in support of this, and I would thank Mr. Unger and Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers for being on camera for all of us here. So, so thank you very much. Thanks for coming. This is an important topic, and you have our attention.
As their teacher, I want to thank them, too, for coming out this evening. They're all very busy getting into college on spring break from college.
This is big stuff.
But they're definitely leaders at our school and our community.
Good.
So
well,
I commend each of you. It's wonderful.
Ms. President, do we need to take a formal action to solidify this support, or do you believe we can just move from here?
Yeah, it's under presentations and not so. We have it set up to take a motion.
I've got to say, though, as much as I would like to see that happen, it is under presentations, not discussion action, and I would be uncomfortable taking a vote of support on this without it being properly noticed. So I would support bringing this back to the next meeting for that.
Unfortunately, we'll miss the deadline. The next board meeting is April 16th.
So I'd like to suggest the board has sometimes worked with consensus just to show up, thumbs up, thumbs down. And I would like to suggest we do that.
Yeah, I thought that's what we've kind of done, to have consensus that
I'm just making sure.
So is everyone... Let's confirm it once again.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being so supportive of us, and we look forward to sharing the details of our D.C. trip with you guys.
Yeah, well, yes, please come back and do that.
And the Washington Post did an article today about our trip, if you want to read more about it.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks so much. All right. We received... no correspondence to the whole board that I'm aware of at the time that the agenda was published. And at this time, I would add, this is our time for public comment for things that are not on the agenda elsewhere. Is there anyone here? We have no yellow forms, but I would ask at this time, is there anyone here for public comment at this time?
We do have a request from Lena Fagan, I believe, for item 9.02, and I would just ask if she would prefer to speak now during public comment or if she would rather wait until the item itself. Okay.
You'll wait? Okay, right. Great. Thank you. So it is time for our superintendent's updates, business and budget, Mr. Pinkerton.
So, yeah, just two quick things. We actually just went through our CISC property review. So for our insurance, once a year, they send us kind of a huge list of every single building, shed, multipurpose room, office throughout the district. And so I sat down with Chris Bonin as well as Rick Stimson to kind of go through everything. And it was one of those things where we've made so many changes now through the bond measure and positive things in terms of new buildings and the pool. And there was just a lot of things that we had to change, which was a positive in a lot of good ways. And then the second thing was on Friday, we had our SIPE countywide safety meeting. So once a year, they get all the districts together to celebrate safety. So we have a safety committee of individuals from our district, so all walks from classified, certificated bargaining units as well as administration. And probably the most positive thing that came out of it in terms of our district, one, the hosts were wearing our safety shirts was one, but...
As were you, I saw.
Yes.
You're hard to miss in your safety shirt.
Yes. But... This is about the fifth or sixth year now that we've had the best workers' comp rates in the county.
Oh, great.
So other than Cuesta College, who has no special education programs, our school district has the best safety record, which corresponds with those workers' comp rates, which is huge for our budget. So there's an amount of money that per $1,000, and it's based on your workers' comp rates and accidents, those types of things ongoing. So kudos to the safety committee. I just wanted to kind of, share that and thank them for the work that they're doing. And they're already thinking of more and more ideas that they can maybe implement in the future to keep safety a priority for the district.
Thank you. Mr. Millar, did you have a question?
Yes. Ryan, so the CISC review of our properties, is that related to making sure our coverages are up to date?
Insurance, yes. Okay, absolutely.
Thank you.
Educational and services update, Mrs. McGrath.
Yes, thanks. I know that Annalise mentioned the Just One Job Fair, but just a quick little update. There was over 200 students involved, as well as over 45 businesses here at Moore Bay High School today. So great opportunity for our students to go through a true interview process and connect with businesses and for businesses to be connected with our CTE pathways as well. So super excited about that. We held a Rotary Luncheon on Monday, and this was just a really great opportunity for us to engage with caring community members that chose to come to our business on the vocational day, and we were able to share information with them about CTE as well as the foundation, kind of just give them updates, allow them to ask questions. So a great way to kind of coordinate with our Rotary group and people that came there. So that was a great opportunity, and I think Ellen came by, so we appreciate you stopping in, Ellen. Elementary conference week, just a reminder that the spring conferences are finishing up for elementary, and another good opportunity for teachers to be able to check in with parents and students and to be able to kind of do that last final push of things that they can work on for the school year. So I know it's a strenuous week for our teachers, so it's a big shout out to them for doing that. We did have our next session of our Equity Institute, which has really been an impactful and really insightful institute. So it meets once a month with a group that's kind of following through different topics related to equity, and it's just been a great opportunity for members, frankly, from our school district, but as well as districts around our whole area, to come together and kind of put their heads together, learning and also sharing information with one another about topics related to equity. So that's been going well and very impactful. We also had a foundation board meeting earlier today. It is just going incredible. So excited to be part of that group and really looking forward to the things that are moving forward there. Today, they did approve learning grants. I know I mentioned that to you in the past, that they had created a task force. So it will look different than just TEACH grants, kind of, that the district has seen in the past. They are talking about kind of working with the community foundation to see, possibly consider what that transition might look like. But they're looking at fairly large innovation grants, maybe in the $10,000 range, as well as opening up to students, as well as having teacher grants kind of in the $1,000 to $5,000 range, and as well as some really neat opportunities that they're calling Dream Big, that may be just kind of an open invitation, that if someone has some wild, awesome, crazy idea that they would love to see funded, that there's always kind of that open invitation to be able to dream big and see if we can make it possible. So, you know, again, just a kudos to lots of incredible volunteers that are giving their time to do great things for our kids. So lots of great things going on.
Thank you. All right, Measure D.
Yeah, so just one quick note. We had our Citizens Bond Oversight Committee meeting on Monday and reviewed the current plans for San Luis Obispo High School upcoming, as well as walk down, and they got to see the new math building, the 900 building classrooms. We're super jazzed. You know, it's nice to see these things now and seeing the bond dollars at work. So they were very excited.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, thanks. So I had the opportunity to attend the CBOC. And the reason I went was because Mr. Isom phoned in and did a presentation on how the bonds get paid back. And during that discussion, it came up that while the dollar amount is $49 per $100,000, if certain things happen correctly in the universe, and it seems like they will for us, that bond rate actually can go down. Can't go over that, but it actually can go down. So the people in our community that supported us so with such a super majority could actually see that their bond rates go down. And I can't remember the exact two things that have to happen. I think
assessed values.
Yeah, assessed values have to go up, and that's what we see. And so that will actually mean lower taxes.
So it was actually one of the questions that came up from one of our citizens on the bond oversight committee, that they went, how does this bond get paid back? How's it work, type of thing? So John Isom came on, we Skyped him in, and he kind of led them through kind of here's kind of the step-by-step process. And so one of the questions was, you know, hey, it's 49, you know, per 100,000. What's that look like long-term in terms of paying back? And yes, as we've seen, appraised values have increased way more than the 3.5%. That they've kind of, you know, based the projections on. And if that happens, if, you know, the new properties are built, those types of things, that the actual amount per 100,000 can shrink so over time. So, which is great for taxpayers, and we still paid off our bonds. And he really emphasized the fact that because the district's financial stable situation, that we were able to sell these bonds and get them at a much cheaper interest rate than a lot of other districts in the area. So it's, you know, kind of a kudos to the district.
All right, thank you. All right, next item 8.01, resolution to authorize school facility program modernization funding applications.
So we are not Mark Twain Union Elementary School District, as you'll see when you pop up on the top there. But this is the resolution that we're putting forward today. And so what happens is when the state runs out of money in the modernization grant fund, as they have, what they do is they make districts go through this hoop of then passing a resolution to state that the board is still in support of these projects and still in support of these modernizations, so that we can continue to stay in line for funds in the future when they come around. So that's the purpose of these resolutions tonight, is just to get the board to, again, show their support that we definitely are modernizing those buildings and we want those state funds when they come in.
All right. Is there anyone from the public who would like to discuss this resolution? All right. Seeing none, we'll come back to the board. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Ryan, so what's the status of the state funds, and what kind of timeline will we figure out whether they're going to actually fund it or not, bonds or not?
Yeah, so Governor Newsom has kind of pledged more state bonds in the future, and as well as selling the current bonds that are available. it's unknown right now in terms of what that means and, you know, how far along the, you know, the path is. But again, even working with our advisor through SchoolWorks, we're looking at like 8 years from now, okay, in terms of potentially receiving those funds.
And this, these funds would be to give us extra leverage, more bang for the buck for our Measure D building program.
Absolutely.
As well. So thank you. Keep it up.
Right. Any further discussion? Then we need a motion for the resolution. Mr. Millar.
I'll move approval of resolution number 1418-19. Support of applications for state school facility program and modernization fund.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. This is a resolution. We need a roll call.
Mr. Millar? Aye. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Frame?
Yes.
Resolution passes 6 with 1 absent.
Thank you. Okay, next we're moving on to the discussion action portion of the agenda, 9.01, executive summary of proposed new secondary courses. Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. Tonight I would seeking your approval on 2 new courses for our high school level courses. So we have one course, it's called AP Seminar, which can be a little deceiving because we have seminar classes that students sometimes use, especially in the third trimester at SLO High. I know you've probably heard about seminars related to AP classes, but this is actually different. This is actually a junior level English course that is a full year course, either 2 trimesters or 2 semesters. And you can tell by the description, it's kind of a modern and unique course that's exciting. The teachers are excited about implementing because it does have cross-curricular conversations, has some real-world topics that they're analyzing, as well as looking at divergent perspectives, which I think are all topics that we look forward to kids exploring. The second course I'm excited about as well, this is a music and audio engineering course that would be within our CTE pathway, would also seek visual and performing arts approval for UCCSU, and you can see that this is, you know, a sound production class, so also kind of a modern course available within our visual and performing arts and music pathways. So tonight I'm seeking your approval to implement these 2 new courses.
Will these be offered at both high schools?
When there's teacher and student interest, yes, they're available at both.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Buckman.
Yep, thanks. So on the first class, I noted that the prerequisite is English 10 and English 10H and teacher recommendation. And so is there a way for a student to, in college we used to call it challenge, the prerequisite or challenge, so you would take an exam. So is there an alternative way for a student to get into this other than the 3 options that are up there? And I think teacher recommendation is a great opportunity, especially when we talk about equity and not just opening the door but inviting somebody in. But is there an alternative way? And one example I came up with is, what if a kid comes from outside the district? Because mm-hmm. these are pretty district-oriented.
Right. I think one thing to keep in mind is it does say or. So it's taking any of those options. And every student in California would have a 4-year English requirement. So I think it's pretty safe to say that anyone would be in a sophomore English course. Those are all of our sophomore English courses. So you're taking a college prep course or an honors course or a teacher recommendation if perhaps you were in a special ed course that then could say, great, this AP course would be great for you.
Okay. And then on the music class, I see that from, let me see, how do I phrase this? Is this a capstone class or is this just within the pathway?
Good question. It is just within the pathway, not a capstone.
Okay. And then it appears to me that within the prerequisites, it's concert, choir, or music appreciation. But this really is a tech-type class. This is really sort of the embodiment of STEAM, but it's a tech-type class. So it's more of a using equipment and that. So is there another way, again, for a student to get in there that may be interested in not concert choir and not music appreciation, but, gosh, I really want to be a sound – oh, hi, guys. I really want to be a sound technician.
Right. I would say in that case – Students are always welcome to approach the teacher or talk to the counselor if they would like kind of a special circumstance to be able to enter the course. But I would say that within the pathway, there's a couple of things. One is we want to encourage students to have some basic musical information maybe before they enter that would help them be successful in that course. The other thing would be we always want to encourage students to travel along a pathway when possible because it builds skills and builds their knowledge so that they can complete the pathway. If they're wanting to just kind of insert, they can always approach the teacher or the counselor about an exception.
So at some point I'd love to sit down with somebody and talk about sort of merging those tracks and then coming out again. So it would maybe open it to somebody that's interested in engineering. Mm-hmm. But future discussion, mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Is there... I think I forgot to go to the public. I did go to the public. Oh, I did not go to the public. Is there anyone from the public here to discuss this? Okay. Anyone else from the board? Oh, Mr. Buckman.
No, I was just going to make the motion.
Please do so.
Thanks. I'd like to make the motion to approve the high school courses that are being proposed.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. All right. 9.02, NGSS implementation update. Hi. Welcome.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. All right. Well, I get to share our NGSS implementation update with you this evening. And before we kind of get to our actions, I kind of want to just share, again, kind of what the end goal of the NGSS are. And really what this is about is preparing our students to be active and scientifically literate citizens in the 21st century, involving our students in active and inquiry-based instruction, where students explain and explore real-world phenomenon and solve real-world problems. And it's important that this learning progresses K-12, because that's how the standards are developed, and that also produces a element of equity in science education throughout every grade level to prevent knowledge gaps. In this as well is an element of engineering, where our students are developing an understanding of the engineering design process, criteria and constraints, and the whole redesign and improvement process. Again, the end result, of course, preparing our students for college and career readiness and to be scientifically literate citizens, as we saw with some of our students earlier today in the 21st century. And, of course, a great thing is that these standards are aligned with our goals that we're seeking to achieve in math at ELA with the Common Core State Standards as well. We do have an operational science test this year. This is the first year of operational assessment. Last year, we engaged in a field test, and 2 years ago was a pilot test. We will be assessing our students in fifth grade and eighth grade, and this year only, we'll be assessing our students at both 11th and 12th grade. Moving forward from this year, we'll just be assessing our juniors. And it's important to note that these assessments are grade banded so that they don't just assess students at a particular grade level, but over a multiple grades. So fifth grade test is grades 3, 4, 5 standards. Eighth grade test is 6, 7, and 8 grade standards. And the high school assessment encompasses content and understanding from our biology, chemistry, and physics courses. Again, this is our first year of operational assessment, so we will have reportable data available this fall, and we look forward to kind of seeing just what our baseline kind of data is for that. What we've been doing in our elementary science program, grades K-5 this year, is first off, we are in our final year of implementing all three of the FOSS modules of the FOSS curriculum in grades K-5. We started 2 years ago with the first module. Last year, we added a second module. And then this year is the third and final module. So we have a kind of final implementation there. And then we've also started a science lead and support model in our elementary grades, where we have two science lead teachers that kind of lead and support kind of the overarching K-5 science program, and also then provide leadership to our science site support teachers, where there's one science site support teacher at each of our elementary schools. So there's kind of a nice leadership model of overarching leadership and direction, as well as site leadership and support as well. These teachers provide professional learning at the site level. The lead teachers kind of develop it and then share it with the site teachers, and then that's implemented at the site level to all of our elementary teachers. We've gone through two rounds of professional learning cycles in accordance with addressing science, first one being supporting student sense-making and oral discussions in science, and then the second one being of increasing teacher understanding of the ELD support strategies and resources that exist in our FOSS curriculum and utilizing those to support instruction and learning. We've also implemented, or this is our first year, a new system of producing and purchasing and replenishing our consumables for science investigations, which is incredibly important, as we know, for science investigations. And this was implemented pretty well, and we continue to refine this process over time, really allowing more site autonomy, making things easier for teachers to buy materials throughout the school year instead of just over summer. What we imagine doing moving forward into next year is really basing a lot of the refinements off of a lot of teacher input about how we can really expedite and smooth out the bumps that we experienced this year to really make it easy for our teachers to access the resources that they need to be able to teach the science that we want them to be teaching. And then what we're going to be doing, actually, next month, I'm going to be working with a number of our grade-level teacher teams to look at updating our science scope and sequence to help better align instruction and just increase kind of instructional efficiency, especially in regards to science. We, over the last couple of years, we've developed recommended aligned scope and sequences with science, history, social science, reading, and writing, and this will kind of just be another update to that, especially looking at the science piece because we have some new information and as an update in a teacher's guide from FOSS, and so we look at how that aligns and need to do some updating with that. So I'll be working with teachers and next month to provide some updated recommendations in our science scope and sequence. Moving into next year, again, we'll have some data to look at, but again, it'll be baseline data, so we'll just kind of take a look and see where we are. And then we'll continue, we're on a trajectory right now in our science implementation, so a lot of our practices are going to be refinement, reflection, analyze, you know, what's working, what's not, and so we'll do that with the science lead model based off of teacher recommendation and experience and feedback. Same thing with updating the consumables ordering process. Again, we want this to be smooth and easy for our teachers to be able to access the materials they need to teach science. And then especially continuing to refine and hopefully really continuing to move towards integrating science instruction, especially in reading and writing. We've started taking some steps in aligning our scope and sequences. But really continued work of developing actual tools and resources for teachers to implement in the classroom to be able to do that effectively is going to be especially critical in the elementary grades. In middle school, we are actually in the middle of evaluating instructional materials. Our teachers actually just started piloting two different resources that we look forward to seeing what their experience is. They've been utilizing a lot of tools to evaluate these materials from the California Department of Education, and the conversations around these programs that we've been looking at have been very collaborative, very critical, and very robust. We're going to start meeting as a science adoption committee after spring break to kind of look at the pilot process and analyze the data from the pilot evaluation materials, and hopefully come to the school board later for a recommendation for adoption of said materials. We're continuing developing our site leadership, of course, at both middle schools, just through a variety of professional learning offerings, especially sending our teachers to state conferences and workshops. The science landscape changes can change very quickly right now. There's a whole lot of new information and resources available, so it's critical that we do that now, and of course, moving into the next year as well, continuing to develop our teachers' understanding, skills, and resources. Again, moving into next year with middle school, we'll implement those adopted science materials that we will select by the end of this year. And again, because the process of evaluating these materials is so robust, we'll actually already be able to have identified areas of that we need to develop in our adopted materials, and we can provide targeted professional learning for our teachers and ways to strengthen the materials that we select and adopt, because unfortunately no material is completely perfect. And then in high school, we're in our final year of updating our science scope and sequence. So we've been working on bringing a fresh biology down to the freshman level, and then chemistry down to the sophomore level, which opens up some elective potential at the junior senior level for our science course offerings. And our teachers have been working on collaborative release days to develop and plan those courses. And really, it's a neat thing to see the teachers at both of our high schools work together, share best practices, and refine their instruction and collaboratively work together to build units for our students. We are going to be looking at, for chemistry and physics in particular this year, identifying and selecting a couple programs to pilot in chemistry and physics next year. We already did that process last year in biology, and our biology teachers are implementing those materials in year one this year. And then again, we'll be continuing to develop. We have been developing our site capacity for NGSS leadership at both of our high schools through professional learning opportunities, and we'll continue to do that in the future. And so again, I think it's important to see the trajectory about where we've been and where we are today. And I think it's really important to just acknowledge the work of our teachers over the last 4 or 5 years in implementing the Next Generation Science Standards. We've come a long way. We're definitely NGSS leaders in the county, and I dare say even in some areas in the state as well. And it's because of your support and the hard work of our teachers. We have a lot of work still to do, as we always do in education. And so, of course, we're going to continue to refine the systems and structures that we have in place with our leadership model and elementary and consumables process. And, of course, looking at how to integrate successfully with a particular reading and writing. Secondary science, again, we'll be looking at how do we select and implement the instructional materials that we can finally give to our teachers that they've been lacking for so long. And we have, again, just a dedicated group of teachers that work collaboratively well for the good of our students. And so I think that it's important to, again, kind of bring it back and all together and remember the importance of a robust and strong K-12 science system. And really, I think it produces three things. First off, of course, producing a K-12 science system where students receive science every year, no matter where they are, who they are, is an element of equity for all of our kids. It also supports our English language learners, because as you develop science content understanding, you also are developing language. They are reading and writing and talking about science. You can develop both of those together and support those learners. And, of course, if we're asking students to engage in inquiry and ask questions as scientists and engineers engage in their fields, then we're engaging our kids and igniting their curiosity, which is so imperative for today, because we need students that are excellent in solving the problems, both of today and in the future. So, again, thank you. And any questions?
First, I'm going to go to the public. I know we do have someone who would like to speak to this. And Mrs. Fagan, I know that you attend meetings frequently, so you know the drill, but for purposes of record keeping, I'm going to describe the public comment process. Your presentation should be as brief as possible. The total time, you are limited to...
I got my time right there.
Yes. Perhaps you'd like to give the... Mrs. Campbell will start the clock when you begin speaking. Okay. And it doesn't appear that you have handouts or information to give to the board at this time, so we'll dispense with additional details. And thank you for speaking with us tonight.
Sure. Thanks. Hi, I'm Lena Egan. I'm a parent of a 7th grader at Lugana and a 4th grader at Teach. Back in November 2013, over 5 years ago, the Superintendent's Accelerated Learning Committee stated the important goal of ensuring students learn 21st century skills for success in today's global economy, including critical thinking, problem solving, communication, and collaboration. The committee's recommendation was to implement this goal through STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics focus in all of our upper elementary classrooms. All means all. It is important to note that the committee's recommendations back then were focused only on the elementary schools. I hope that the board supports accelerated or advanced learning through our secondary schools. Tonight, I'm advocating on behalf of several families whose students are ready for and interested in advanced biology and environmental science courses at our high schools, now that there's possibly openings in 11th and 12th grade electives. Currently, advanced placement courses are the honors pathways at our high schools. While there are AP Physics and AP Chemistry available at both high schools, or soon next year, there are no current plans for AP Biology or AP Environmental Science at either. Note, Templeton and Arroyo Grande High Schools have all four AP Science courses. And also note that Dr. Prater's strategic plan initiatives for student success listed reviewing AP courses and considering additional courses such as AP Biology in the SMART goals adopted May 24th, 2011, over 8 years ago. The district should invest in more rigorous biology and environmental science courses. Students can demonstrate the mastery of biology on the SAT biology subject tests and meet applicable college admission requirements for the highly competitive programs. And we all know how competitive getting into college is these days. Investing in AP biology and AP environmental science broadens access to college-level science courses for students, especially since there are no associated advanced math course requisites like there is for AP Physics and possibly AP Chemistry. The district should invest in these advanced courses so more students can discover their passion for science, as my husband's an organic chemistry professor at Cal Poly, and maybe solve climate change, as demonstrated by the students this earlier today, or cure cancer someday, because science.
Very nice.
That's it.
Thank you, Ms. Egan. Thank you very much for coming.
Sure.
Okay, anyone else? Then we'll come back to the board, Mrs. Frame, then Mr. Buckman, and Mr. Unger.
I can just respond for a moment.
Sure, sorry.
Sure. Yeah, in response to a potential for advanced course offerings, I know that Morro Bay High School is looking into adding AP Chemistry into their course offering potentially for next year. And as I shared earlier, and there's a strong potential of being able to add additional advanced AP or dual enrollment coursework in the sciences in the future as we've adjusted our science scope and sequence. And so I think it should definitely can be something that can be explored by our site administrators and science teachers.
Thank you. Mrs. Frank.
I was going to ask something else, but the dual enrollment, what does that mean?
Dual enrollment?
Yeah.
That's where they take the course at the high school, but they receive college credit. There's kind of a partnership, and typically with Cuesta College.
Okay.
Yeah.
The second thing is on one of the slides it talked about kind of next steps and integration. Mm-hmm. I know there's a concern about instructional minutes. And what is, you know, the kind of standalone instructional minutes for, you know, the elementary school? My concern would be the focus is on more integration as opposed to because teachers are squeezed for instructional minutes, as opposed to the standalone, you know, FOSS investigations that really promote that deep learning for science.
Sure.
So. Do we have any kind of read on about that struggle? And because
it's definitely a challenge, and it's a challenge that we're well aware of. And one of the things that we're trying to help alleviate with some of that is that move towards integration in reading and writing in particular. What we've done over the last couple of years to support some of that integration work is us. Purchase targeted text resources for teachers to have with the science kits and to utilize in their instruction to help with that. We've also just...
Okay, sorry,
it's okay. And then just last year, we were also looking at kind of rolling out a number of
kind of accessible teacher-created resources by which some of our kind of early integrators, so to speak, could kind of share some of their resources across the grade level, across the district. That's still definitely in its kind of early stages, but it's definitely, you know, something that we want to kind of hopefully come back to and add to and build on. And that's the integration piece, and I know that's not fully what your question was in terms of the science, like, investigation time, I think was part of your question as well.
I think kind of that project-based, you know, kind of learning that science is, and that teachers feel squeezed for instructional minutes so that they will rely on the reading of the text through no fault, you know, of teachers.
No,
they're just squeezed in time. And so my worry is that, you know, what are those recommended, you know, in order for them to do well on these tests, what are those standalone investigations that they really need to get through to get a breadth and depth?
And you're actually describing actually the scope and sequence work that I'm going to be doing with teachers in April. Actually will be actually the primary goal to start looking at that, look at standards, look at our resources that we have, and try to start making some sense of that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Buckman?
So my questions are going to be not quite as deep, because those were great. So Mrs. Egan just brought up the Common Core, and I had a question as well, so I'm going to be a little more specific. So as we look at these new science standards, are they in line with the Common Core standards, the foundation of, you know, critical thinking? Okay.
Yeah, so there's a great, I wish I had the Venn diagram. There's a kind of a three-way Venn diagram that, you know, you've, I'm sure, seen a million times already, and to show a lot of that. And a lot of the pieces in, really that I feel like are critical are evidence-based writing in particular, and kind of making claims. You know, we've talked about hypotheses in science all the time. We talk, you know, just changing a little bit of the lingo a little bit. And so we're focusing a lot of that. A great example, I feel like, as an instructional strategy is we use a lot in science is something called the claim evidence reasoning. And that is very strongly tied towards Common Core writing support. Again, focusing on your evidence and developing that over time. And it's a great thing to see, especially in our elementary classrooms, because I know that's happening as well. And then when you talk about the practices of the science and the practices of math, there's actually you know, modeling is in both of them. You know, computational thinking and reasoning are in both. So there's a lot of commonalities in between, all of them.
And I have a second question. No? Okay, great. So you actually mentioned consumables, and so one of the things I was thinking is over the years I've sort of watched the cost of textbooks go this way and the amount of money that the district puts into textbooks, but my hope has always been that consumables would somehow surpass that. And I think it goes to the hands-on. So I'm just wondering, I don't know if it's really specific to this set of standards or not, but are you seeing anything where we're starting to actually have more hands-on and consumables and things that kids touch as opposed to expensive textbooks?
Well, I mean, the resources are in the teachers, you know, teachers' hands in the classrooms or the science labs, and so you know that they are utilizing them more. And then in terms of the, like, maybe I don't know, budgetary
it would be
allusion
a
to
it
that.
Would be a measure.
I mean,
use.
It is right, and that is a piece. We have a certain amount budgeted for K-5 science consumables, and obviously, if there's a lesser amount spent, then there is kind of like, well, what is that discrepancy? Why is that discrepancy there potentially? Unless we over budgeted, I guess, which, you know, I guess is a good problem. But did I answer your question?
Close. We're good. Thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Unger, then Dr. Kim.
You know what? Mrs. Friedman asked my question.
I just wanted to comment on the language that you've used to describe what you're doing with our students. Thank you very much. Which is igniting curiosity and real-world relevance, because our students in it, that's exactly what they're telling us they want, and I think especially in science, which is so much the it subject right now, so we have the opportunity to sort of grab them by the shirt and bring them in. I think, and you're doing a great job of that, so thank you.
Thank you.
And I didn't quite catch what you said in regards to Lena's comment about science and the AP biology. You were saying they could be team-taught? We could, like, teamed up with another subject? Is that what you were suggesting?
No, I think maybe it was with the dual enrollment, maybe,
dual enrollment,
of
yes,
the partnership,
yes.
Like, typically with, like, a community college like Cuesta, is generally an agreement that the course that is taught at the high school is kind of the equivalent at the community college level, and you get college credit for that.
Ah, okay. And that would qualify as an AP course?
Not necessarily, perhaps? But it's a rough equivalent. I don't know if Ms. McGrath wants to.
Let me jump in a little, too, is in some ways, dual enrollment is seen as sometimes more beneficial to a student even than an AP course. That's a little bit of a controversial statement, but I don't mind putting it out there, because if a student completes the dual enrolled course, they're sitting in a high school class. They have made an agreement with the Cuesta teacher to say, I agree that I'm teaching that Cuesta content. And when they complete the course with the grade, they're getting a college transcript guaranteed. So with AP, you have to not only pass the test, but the college that you're going into has to accept the score for that test, and the university has to accept the score for that test, and then they determine what is it that they're going to give you credit for. For example, it could be a AP English course, but they may say, we're actually only going to give elective credit for that, or we only accept a score of a 5. They get to make their own rules, where with a dual enrollment course, a student's leaving with a college transcript and the grade.
Excellent.
Incredibly beneficial.
That's fantastic.
And if I may add, no one has to pay for an AP test, so if you're thinking about equity considerations there too.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Next, 9.03, Memorandum of Understanding for School Resource Officer.
Dr. Prater. Thank you. During our last board meeting, we were able to bring forward a Memorandum of Understanding with the City of Morro Bay and an SRO agreement. And I have to say, it was a real pleasure working with the City of Morro Bay and Chief Cox, and I was a little bit nervous about my experience working through this complex document with the City of San Luis Obispo. But I have to tell you, Chief Cantrell, City Administrator Derek Johnson, and Captain Smith were a pleasure to work with. They worked really hard with our legal counsel. They were cooperative, they were flexible, and this agreement is very similar to what was approved during our last meeting with the City of Morro Bay. The terms are a little bit different, only insofar as we were working around collective bargaining agreements with the police. But I think the end result is that we will have a strong partnership with the law enforcement agencies in both Morro Bay and San Luis, and we already have a strong agreement with the Sheriff's Department in Los Osos. So I'm feeling really good about it. The agreement in front of you tonight is for the City of San Luis Obispo and our district for the school resource officer agreement.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this issue? Dr. Prater, I do notice a bit of a difference in cost. Yeah. Is that we have more schools here?
The cost of doing business in San Luis is higher, and we're working within the collective bargaining agreements of each institution. So in San Luis, it's more expensive. Plus, in San Luis, there's, like you had mentioned, there's 10 schools. 12 schools plus the district office, so 13 schools, plus they will help us out at Los Ranchos.
Which is not within the city boundaries.
Right, and so we have a much more complex situation, and that amount of $199,427 would have been higher. They worked with us on that amount.
That's one of the things about
and, and for that, I'm most grateful.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Millar, then Mr. Buckman.
Well, first, I'd just like the cost, as I understand the agreement, is associated with the cost of an FTE, one police officer in SLO. Yep. And some folks may not be aware, but the SLO PD went to binding the city, allowed binding arbitration, which they had those during my San Diego days. But It's so that's really the cost. What I like about this agreement, and I think it addresses some of the earlier attempts to have a school resource officer with the city, and I think it tightens up us having the services of that full-time equivalent in a better way, more comprehensively, and I'm very pleased with their willingness to allow us to add, not ad hoc, but to add scheduled events and change things with the officer. So I'm very pleased with that. The one thing I was very curious about was when you have a two-party agreement and each party holds the other party at harmless. It's a little mind-boggling to me, but the good part of it was that you acknowledge principles of comparative fault, and so we may hold each other harmless, but we'll still get to the bottom of whatever problems should come up. But I'm very pleased with the agreement. I think it cures a lot of the difficulties we had before.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. So kudos. I think we've got SROs now at every district, at every site. Yeah. I think that's great, and with multiple organizations. I do have a question on Section 13, which talks about, I'm sorry, if we could go to Section 3 first on student records.
Uh-huh.
And the board has indicated that perception is really important to it, and for me this sort of, my understanding is we cannot track whether a student is an immigrant or not, and this section sort of sounds like we somehow have knowledge whether a student is an immigrant or not. I'm sorry.
Section 3?
7, I believe.
Sorry, 7. Thanks, Chris. And I have not taken Common Core math on student records.
So,
including any record related to a student's immigration status.
Yes, so it says shall not.
Right. But the implication is that we can't share what we have, and we don't have that.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just related to the way I read it is, and this came from our legal counsel, from Lozano Smith, and it was really specific to the district maintaining control of any confidential material. Any confidential material. So, and only allowing access to the SRO with what does it say here? A legitimate educational interest to the whatever the investigation they might be doing. So maybe I'm not understanding your question.
So where you're looking at any student record, it specifically calls out confidential any student record. It specifically calls out immigration status. And we don't, my understanding is we shouldn't have any records on immigrant status. So
I see your point.
So I'm just, you know, it's just a perception thing, but I just, and I don't think it's worth changing the contract, I guess, but it just sort of jumped out at me. The second one was on the compliance with law section. My understanding is that districts can sometimes have a higher standard, a higher, I don't know, maybe Wal can help you, the term for,
yeah.
So like inspection of vehicles in the parking lot, I think maybe one, where when we talk about substance, we can, yeah. So just, you know, are the officers going to be made aware of that, and are we aware of what they're going to be enforcing? So just questions I had, not any reason to change the contract.
Yeah, okay, those are good points. Once we get the SRO on board, I think it's worth our while to go through this with them and really clarify with our site administrators what this is, because I think we easily can lose sight of this on the ground floor once the busyness of the school year begins. So part of what my hope is to do over the summer is to bring in the SROs with our site and district staff and review this and make sure we're all on the same page. So very, very, very good points.
Right. If there's no further discussion, this is an action item. So if someone would make a motion. Yeah, I did.
I'll make the motion.
All right. I'll second. So we have a motion to accept the Memorandum of Understanding for School Resource Office by Mr. Buckman, seconded by me. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. All right. So next, Mrs. McGrath is going to see what she can kill us with board policies here tonight. These are all first readings, so.
They are first readings. Your subcommittee has been busy. So tonight we do have a few. I will begin with career technical education. So we have a proposed new board policy here. I'm on the wrong one. Sorry.
You're going backwards.
Apologies. Yeah. Volunteer assistant.
The policies.
Thank you. Yes, volunteer assistants. So we're looking at board policy 1240. We do have the red sections that were suggested additions from Gamut. You can see that that was reviewed by Mrs. Newland, I believe, on this one, and your subcommittee as well. You can see that these are all suggested additions.
Is there anyone from the public who has a comment with regard to this board policy? And I would suggest that because these are first readings and there is nothing urgent, these are not time sensitive this evening, that we will bring these back for a second reading. Any comments from the board on board policy 1240? Okay, carry on.
Thank you. Let me make sure I'm on the right one. 1340.
There we go.
Okay, policy 1340 is access to district records. You can see as well this was a suggested addition that looks like in response to a public records request. We do have additional requirements, and so the paragraph there shows the additional legal statements needed.
Okay. Anyone from the public interested in 1340? Can we come to the board? Any comments, questions? All right. Board policy 4112.2.
Thank you. This policy is on certificated personnel and certification. You can see that there's quite a few additions. The red ones would be legal additions, quite a few. Here you can see the whole second page, as well as some additions here from the subcommittee as well. You'll notice that in the second paragraph, the subcommittee did ask for other certification documentation from the CTC. A correction there on the where it said superintendent of schools, that information is actually registered with the Office of Education. So we did correct that there, that's kept with the county. Otherwise, you can see the recommended legal and Gamut updates.
Anyone from the public fascinated by 4112.2 wishing to comment? Okay, back to the board. Any comments? Right, onward and upward. 4115, it looks like.
Thank you. 4115 is our board policy on certificated personnel and the evaluation and supervision of our employees. You can see there that that we always assess the performance of our certificated instructional staff, of which we have excellent examples. You can see the red updates as well on that page from Gamut and legal updates.
Anyone from the public wishing to discuss this board policy? All right, back to the board. Anyone here? Okay, thank you. And Now we're ready for CTE.
Thank you. So Board Policy 6178, you can see on instruction related to career technical education, and this is a proposed new board policy. You'll notice the subcommittee did some good work here in looking at some additions and some kind of clarifications. Notice in the third paragraph that it says the board shall review and approve all district plans and applications. We thought all applications was a little overboard. Of course, sometimes those grants or applications require board approval. So, of course, in those cases, we would bring it forward. But, of course, asking for your approval on any district plans. And then it also notes that at least every 3 years, the superintendent or designee would report the findings that, of analysis to the board.
And once again, anyone out there in our vast audience wishing to discuss this with us? All right, back to the board. Everyone ready for these to return for a second reading at our next meeting? Okay, thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman, did you have a question or comment? Okay. All right. Next, we have item 9.09. Oh, no, that's the one we, never mind. We took that out. 9.10, approve board member pay for permissible absence. Who's going to?
Yes, Madam President. Mrs. Roger has been out assisting her sister, who had experienced a tragedy, losing her husband. So I'm requesting on her behalf that the board approve her absence for the board study session as well as this evening.
All right. I will assume that there's no, but I will ask if there's anyone from the public wishing to discuss this. Mr. Millar.
I'll move approval of the request.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Then we have moved 10.03 up to this section, certification to the State Board of Education, temporary athletic coaches.
I think it's 10.04. Yes?
No.
No?
That says approval of furniture and equipment requests on mine. But.
Okay. So this is the annual requirement that the board submit to the State Department, the California Department of Education, that you have certified all of our athletic coaches have been trained for each one of the seasons. So it's kind of a culmination of the different other times during the seasons I've been getting up here and talking about the coaches and them being certified. So now the board has to certify to the State Boards of Education.
Is there anyone from the public who has any questions or would like to discuss this with us? All right, we'll come back to the board. Any questions from the board? Seeing none, this also is an action item. So if we could have a motion.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, we are moving on to our action consent calendar. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. 10.01, acceptance of donations. 10.02, our second reading of proposed revisions to board policy 1312.1. 10.03, we moved. That's off. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.05, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Can you please pull that?
10.06, disposal of surplus items. All right.
I'll move approval of items 10.01, 10.02, 10.04, and 10.06.
Oh, we have, Mrs. Frame just informed me that she would like to pull 10.02, so could we revise that to exclude 10.02, Mr. Millar?
That's, Let's try that again. Yeah. I move approval of 10.01, 10.03, no, it's already been approved, 10.04, and 10.06.
Okay.
I got that right. Okay.
All in favor?
We need a second.
Oh, we need a second.
A second.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Millar to approve those. Mrs. Campbell will get all that straight. And a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Okay, I'm going to do these in the order they appear here. So 10.02, Mrs. Frame.
I just wanted to ask regarding complaints regarding district employees. Do we have any? I don't see anything in here, and maybe we don't need to, about parents who need assistance in, you know, filing a formal complaint, what that would look like. Just, I don't know, you know, if a parent vulnerable or English, I mean, who would they go to if they needed to or wanted to? That's all. So.
Okay, this is a second reading, but we could, if the board wishes, it could go back. We discussed this before.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, some of these things would be addressed in the administrative regulations.
Yeah, yes. That may be an AR. Could, if you could just.
I'd be happy to check to ensure that it's spelled out in the AR.
Okay. So with that caveat, would you then approve?
Mm-hmm.
Would you go ahead and make the motion to approve this item 10.02?
I'll make the motion to approve item, what is it?
10.02. All right. I'll second. So motion by Mrs. Frame, a second by me. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then 10.05, Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. So as I was going through the personnel, the certificated, the assignments, and I went down to the extra duty assignments and noted a lot of these are women, men, boys, girls, but then as we get down, sometimes it doesn't include a gender, and I don't know if that's really important, but for me it would be interesting to see it, and I'm hoping my fellow board members would support me in that, so that in the future that we would see the gender either consistently applied to in this list.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Do you mean on the school abbreviation, the key?
So if we call up the extra duty is just assigned, and if we just jump down to the third from the bottom, JV baseball coach and JV softball coach, are those implied to be?
I'm pretty sure they're both male and female together, but I can double check on that.
Okay. So I guess I would just need
because to there are some sports like wrestling, for example, uh-huh, which you would think is traditionally a boys, but
okay.
They allow girls to do wrestling. They do allow females to do football.
Got it.
And then they can count that under Title IX as a mm-hmm. co-ed sport, you know, or dancing as a, you know, co-ed sport or whatever, you know, stunt cheer. So some of them are listed that way because, like, I bet varsity stunt cheer is both for males and females.
Yeah, and track and field. And.
But I can at least make sure that we know which ones, but I'm assuming the ones that don't say boys and girls are open to everybody.
Okay. I can live with that, or maybe I think Evelyn,
we'll find out.
My fellow board member, Evelyn May said just including co-ed or something.
Okay.
So, but just caught my eye. So
yeah.
I'd move approval of 10.5 in the consent agenda.
I'll second. Oh, Mrs. Frame, did you have a comment on this? Oh, sorry. You're all right. All right, all in favor, motion by Mr. Buckman, second by me, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, carries 6-0. All right, anything for the advanced agenda, 11.02, Mr.
Yes,
Buckman.
Please. I was talking to a school board member in another district and came to understand that on expulsions, they require, I think what they call a readmittance letter, and so it's a letter from the parent and or the student that says what they've learned or something that they report to the board. And I'm just wondering if we would consider doing a similar addition to our expulsion process.
I don't have an interest in that. Does
okay? And I would. Okay, that's great. I was wondering if there might be the possibility of a some kind of input from administration in Friday memo. So I guess I would ask for that at this point. I don't. And I know that we've sometimes individually asked for things.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not me, Walter, that I'm thinking about. But if you want to put the mic on and make that comment, I would be very good to take that.
I give up.
Okay. And my second request would be that as we've talked more and more about staff housing, it occurs to me at least one principal has mentioned that while we often have the best candidates in the state, that when we do make an offer to them, they have said, well, maybe, and then they look at the cost of housing and they say, I can't come to live here. So I'm wondering if this could be tracked in several ways, and that maybe if the principals could let admin know, if we talk to exiting teachers, just some way that we could track this, because I think I'm hoping at some point we make a decision to look at, I think the term now is staff housing.
Mr. Unger.
I would be willing to support a modification of that in terms of, and I think this would be a longer term process than what you have in mind, Mark, but overall, a discussion, perhaps a study session at some point, one of our Measure D study sessions on the cost of housing here in San Luis Obispo and the coastal areas, as well as possible ways that the school district can look at alternative means for housing for not just our teachers but our staff as well, but our classified staff as well. But I don't see this as something that will be that we can have happen right away. I think this is a larger discussion that will be farther out than, say, the next month, 2 months, 3 months, something like that.
So if I could clarify a little bit. So, Mr. Buckman, are you asking for a specific timeline on this or?
Yeah, I really like what Chris is saying. So as part, I think he's expanded what I was suggesting, which all I was suggesting is that somehow we track teachers that have applied, that principals have said, great, and then they've come back and said, way too expensive. And then also possibly track reasons for leaving if we can just include that, because I think we do ask why they're leaving. And then just track if the comment is that the cost of living is too high. So I think that Chris's comment is perfect, and so that when we do bring this to a study session, we would discuss, well, is there a way to track it, and does it add to the reason to have staff housing?
Yeah, I think it's relevant. We've sent in our efforts to recruit teachers that better reflect our student body. We're having to travel outside of the region to do it, and we've found some really fantastic candidates. We're hoping they'll apply and show interest in moving here. I worry that they will struggle to even make their way for the interview once they do their due diligence. But it would not be an issue at all to track those reasons why. It would be a simple way to add that component to our hiring process and our resignation process even. And I think it would be valuable. It wouldn't be difficult to do. And then tie that into Mr. Unger's point of a sort of a long-term trajectory of looking at our properties. You've already set that as a board priority, and finding creative ways to make living here for our employees more reasonable. So I do have a thought on how we can do that, and I'll present that in the coming months, weeks and months.
Thank you. Is that satisfactory, Mr. Buckman?
Oh, that's great.
Okay, thank you. All right. Before we go to reports by board members, I just wanted to acknowledge Christina Benson, who has been here with us this evening. She is a superintendent from Shandon School District. So thank you for joining us here tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Reports by board members. Anyone? Mr. Buckman.
Yep, thanks. I just wanted to mention the Equity Institute. It came up earlier. I have found it just so valuable as a school board member, A, because I'm in there with staff and administration, and B, it has helped me as a school board member to really look at my implicit bias, and I'm going to give you a personal example. So I was talking with someone a year or two ago about, geez, it'd really be nice if there were homework clubs outside of the site for students that may need help, and I mentioned, you know, it might really be something that we need in Harlem and in Watts. And today, and since the Equity Institute, I realized that was pretty not great. I was pretty much implicit bias. And I thought that's been really good, and I thought I should mention it. I was able to attend the Tri-County Education meeting in Goleta on Friday. We had representatives there from CTA, FT, CSBA, and CSEA talking about the budget. Tri-County Ed will be going to Sacramento just days before the May revise is taken up, and we are always welcome up there. In fact, each of these four groups mentioned how important it is for Tri-County Ed to go up there with its single message. I'd also like to give a shout-out to Valerie Harrigan, who prepared lunch for the Rotary, and I was so honored. She asked for my help, and I thought, oh, this is great. I'll make cookies, and I'll just wow everybody. And Valerie handed me a oven mitt and said, can you pull that bottom shelf out a little bit? So I don't think I qualify for culinary arts, but it felt good.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you, everyone, very much. Our meeting is adjourned.